Off the ball on News Talk. Thanks to Air. Catch all the sports you love free on the Air Sport Pack with Air Broadband.
Right, time to talk rugby this morning. The Lions Tour of 2017 in New Zealand got underway. Pretty poor start as they beat the New Zealand Provincial Barbarians by 13 points to 7, just about getting over the line in the end. But it is one from one, as the tour captain Sam Warburton reflected after the game. Andrew Dunn has joined us in studio, the former Harlequins Leinster and Connacht fly half. But first, let's get the thoughts of Warren Gatland after the game this morning. He was speaking to Sky Sports.
Yeah, no, look, we got held up over the line four times, didn't we? And we created a couple of chances and just a little bit of inaccuracy there. And you feel like it's one of those games you scored two or three tries and you might have gone away. So, look, we know we've got to sharpen up a little bit, but there's some positives and a number of things for us to work on. And yeah, guys still, having only arrived on Wednesday, still taking a little bit of time to just acclimatise and get over that jet lag. But it was a tough game. And you know, I remember back in 2009, we played a Royal 15 in the first game in South Africa, and we struggled, and you know, we found that tough. And to be honest, we got a lot out of tonight's game, you know, compared to say 4 years ago playing the Barbarians in Hong Kong, which was an easy victory for us today. So yeah, it was definitely a good hit out for us.
What's the first thing in the notebook you look at in the morning to say, okay, we need to work on that today?
Yeah, I think there's a number of things. Like I said, you know, there were some things that we created on attack. The message at halftime, look, when we were direct and earned the right to go wide, we created some chances. A few things defensively that Andy was talking about just in the change rooms that we need to do. There was some good energy coming for the guys coming off the bench. You know, we made some changes early on, and I'm pleased with you know, definitely that some of that energy that the bench brought, and I thought that was important for us too.
Any names that you were impressed with today?
Oh, I thought there's some good carries. I thought Ross Moriarty, you know, carried well. There were times Sam Warburton carried well. Ben Teo, you know, did some good things. Stuart Hogg, we saw some footwork with him. You know, he'd probably be disappointed with the pass. You know, he'd like to say he's better than that. And Anthony Watson, you know, probably should have ended up with two or three tries. So look, there's things for us to work on, but some positives to take out of it as well.
Well,
like you say, a win's a win, and you know, it's not the easiest place in the world to come and get wins. So we've started off the tour with a win, and we know we'll get better.
What name you haven't mentioned? Bryn Gatland.
Yeah, no, he did. He caused us some problems in that first half, particularly with his kicking game and stuff. I thought he played pretty well. So yeah, it's probably a win-win, really.
Okay, they're not overly downhearted, Andrew, but it can't have gone as it would have been envisaged in the mind of Warren Gatland and his backroom team. I'm not sure what my expectations were. I wasn't expecting the Lions to step off the plane after two or three days training and put 60 points on any team in New Zealand, even if it was sort of a Barbarian style side that was cobbled together over the last week. But I certainly didn't expect them to be as bad as they were today.
Yeah, they were pretty poor. You would look at, I'd suppose Gatland would look at things like combinations early on. Can he unearth one or two pairings that, you know, players are starting to get a bit of cohesion together? I don't think, you know, when you go down to New Zealand, you're never going to win games by 15, 60 points. If the Lions tour Australia and they might play, you know, the Buckaroos or whoever they're called at the start, you know, at the start, you know, these makey up teams at the start, and they put, you know, 80 points on them at the start, they do it. When you go down to New Zealand, it doesn't happen. You're going to war with a culture and an identity down there, and rugby is just part of every fabric in their society, and it really is like going to a war. And I think you got to take out of it, even from the first game, that they got to win. You know, they didn't get any significant injuries, and Warburton was interviewed afterwards, I thought, and again came across very well. He was calm and he just said, look, we just jog on, you know.
Yeah,
we've got a result and we move on. And the worst possible scenario would have been a draw. You know, they came close at the very tail end of the game with a penalty to the corner, and you could see a driven maul and potentially a kick to draw the match, and I think the media would have gone after them like hell, you know what I mean. So I think to come out, you know, unscathed in terms of injury with a win is probably par, you know, starting off in New Zealand.
You wouldn't learn anything from a 60-point win anyway, would you?
No.
It would just have been seen as a really easy run out, that the combinations never really got a chance to be tested as a pairing or as a back three, for example, or as a front row. So today I'm sure they will have learned plenty. But I'd put it to you that while some people would paint a picture of being picked in the first 15 for the first game as your opportunity to lay down a marker and put yourself in pole position to hold on to the jersey as the tour unfolds, maybe that it is a bit of a poison chalice, because the guys who start against the Blues on Wednesday, well, they will have had 3 or 4 days to sit down as a group to analyse what went wrong this morning. They'll have a chance to learn from a lot of those inaccuracies and a lot of those mistakes without actually having to make the mistakes themselves.
Yeah, well, you know, they've...
like Owen Farrell and Dan Biggar are in a far better position now than they were at 8:35 this morning.
Yeah, very true.
And they didn't kick a ball, apart from Farrell, for the last 20-odd minutes.
Yeah, I mean, well, Johnny had a poor game, you would have to say, plainly. And he was poor in the lead-up. You know, if you look at his last game, he was poor against the Scarlets. He was quite poor. And today, in terms of execution... you know, a few kicks went out on the full. His passing game let him down, and they're not normal. That's not normal for him. Where he's obviously strong is that, you know, he's very resilient and mentally tough guy, clearly. And we talked, you know, during the Six Nations when he came in the rain against France, and he was superb. And he can do that. He can turn on a sixpence from a poor performance 1 week. I don't think he's going to carry it with him. But the problem he's got two finished articles right beside him. He's no longer up against Paddy Jackson, who's a very good player. He's up against the guy who's won 2 European Cups.
Yeah, there's no benefit of the doubt to be had here.
No, and there's not much time. And I don't think Farrell came in and set the world alight, but, you know, they were behind, and then Farrell came in and they got in front, and, you know, X, Y, and Z, he banged over that first kick from the touchline. And it's a tough thing to answer the question originally, is like, is it a poison chalice to get picked in the first game? I think they got to pick someone. You know, they picked they picked a guy like Faletau, who's very likely to start. They picked Sexton, who's obviously very, very close to, you know, or in consideration to start.
Sam Warburton
as captain. You know, so it's not so much a poison chalice. I think they probably would look at it as like a run out. You know, get a bit of, you know, lead out of the legs after the trip.
But you're up against the worst team on the tour schedule. Yeah. So if a really good performance from a fly half against the New Zealand Provincial Barbarians won't carry the same credit as a really good performance against the Auckland Blues or the Canterbury Crusaders, who they play next Saturday. So, for example, the calf strain that Jarrad Payne picked up in the build-up to the game, I would put it to you that it's a blessing for him, because he watched Stuart Hogg put in a really average performance today, and Jarrad Payne, instead of maybe starting today, is probably going to start against Auckland, and he will then, if he puts in a decent performance, have far more credit in the bank than Stuart Hogg does.
Yeah, and like most things in life, a bit of luck and timing. You know, Jarrad Payne by design, I'm sure he didn't get the calf strain, but he's probably thanking his lucky stars. by next Wednesday, Hogg was poor. Hogg is one guy, I think, to me, I think will start regardless. I think he's the obvious candidate at fullback based on the Six Nations, and I don't think those few mistakes this morning are going to perturb Gatland and the boys from selecting. I think he's going to be a shoe-in to start. I think it's slightly different with Sexton when you look at Farrell and or Biggar as options beside him, but I don't see Payne going ahead of him in the pecking order, even if he's a good performance in these two big upcoming games.
Before we leave the Sexton situation, do you believe that they are genuinely looking at Owen Farrell as a 10 or a 12? He did say, Warren Gatland, in the build-up to this first match, that they see Owen Farrell as being a world-class 10. Now, a world-class 10 that has played little or no international rugby in that position in the last 12 months, albeit has won back-to-back European Champions Cups with Saracens in that position.
Yeah, I think it was absolutely on purpose. I think it's a bit of Gatland mind games. I think he's very good psychologically with his own players. I think he's going to bring to that group, he's on record to say, you know, he won't make the mistakes, for example, that were made in when Woodward went down in 05. And he's very kind of transparent. He spoke about it and said it was very clear to the touring players, who are all established internationals in 05, who was the starting group and who were the dirt trackers by week one. He says, I'm not going to do that. So I think quite purposefully he's referring to Farrell as, you know, a world-class 10, because he wants to put pressure on Sexton and maybe wants to see how the two of them duke it out in training. You know, there's going to be a bit of an ego battle there. There's going to be a battle for control in the training field. Who's listening to me? Who's taking direction from X, Y, and Z? Who gives the best direction? Who's the best communicator? So I think Gatland, in a way, psychologically, is putting it up to him. I think he's doing it on purpose. And I also think Gatland is very good in dealing with the New Zealand media also, because it's obviously it's his culture, his background. For example, the way he has disarmed the use of the haka now for the tour, you know, it's brilliant. Mm. You know, suddenly the Kiwis were looking at us going, we can use it as a way to intimidate you week one to week 10. And he said, yeah, we're just going to get so used to it that it's going to, you know, lose its value.
Yeah.
And that kind of psychological warfare is important.
I guess if he starts speaking publicly about Owen Farrell as a 12, you're pretty much telling Farrell that he's guaranteed a place in the Test 15.
Yeah.
And that Jonathan Sexton only has to see off Dan Bigger if he wants to play a 10. Whereas when you throw a little bit of vagueness into it, well, no, we actually see him as a 10. Well, suddenly there's three fly halves that are thinking that they have to fight off the challenge of two others to get into the team. And Owen Farrell is suddenly thinking, well, I've got a major issue on my hands if I'm going to get into the 15. And he's probably trying to do that across the board.
Yeah, he is. And I think he's very lucky with the three out halves he's got. I can't think in history, I'm going back in my mind of great Lions tours, I can't think of three better guys in competition for one spot in any position.
It's not really three though, is it?
Like, well, you never know.
Isn't Gatland, Farrell going to start Gatland, in midfield?
I don't know. Gatland is has obviously been criticised for picking, you know, it was a bit Wales heavy, you know, in a team that didn't really perform all that well in this year's Six Nations. But he's got a go-to guy he trusts. You know, he brought in Bigger into the Welsh setup ahead of Priestland at one stage when Priestland had a very good World Cup previously, and he backed Bigger ahead of Priestland and Bigger has rewarded him in spades. So, you know, he's looking at a guy he deals with as a midfield general, you know, month in, month out for a couple of seasons now. And I think that level of trust is not to be diminished when suddenly pressure comes on in the situation. If he looks at Farrell as a 12, for example, or Sexton as a 10, and maybe it's not going his way, he might jump and leapfrog in with a guy like Bigger. But all three are so talented and so mentally tough that I don't think we can rule out Bigger and just say, look, he's a castaway third choice.
Let's look at the performance as a whole and maybe some of the mitigating factors. A lot of people would have thought they'll find it difficult. They're barely off the plane. They'll have had so little time to get those combinations working. The set piece in particular, line-out malfunctioned a couple of times. You could tell from the kickoff there was an issue. They botched the kickoff completely and gave their opponents field position. I don't think the Lions spent a single second in the Barbarians' half of the field until the 8th minute. So it was pretty much all hands on deck very, very much from the kickoff. Rory Best, his darts weren't great. The scrum was solid enough, to be fair. That didn't go too badly. But overall, it just looked like it was creaking in terms of systematic failures from all over the pitch. And I just wonder, how much credit or consideration do you give those mitigating factors of not much time spent together, having to fly halfway around the world, and some players playing huge club games only 7 days ago?
Yeah, I think they're very much mitigating factors, and I'd be very forgiving. I think that squad came together as a full squad. They obviously had their pre-training get together. I think it was only three quarters of the squad, so it was a full squad. They only came together, I think, 8 days ago, 7 days ago. There's no chance they're going to be systematically strong, regardless how good they are as individuals. It's impossible. When you allow for travel and you allow for all these brand new combinations, the level of timing, the level of repetition that's required for a functional line out. It's, you know, this is the beauty of a line series. That's why it's so exciting. Can they manage to put something together that's not a car crash? It's a minor miracle, even though they're very, very talented. But, you know, key areas that I think they need to look at are, for example, I could see it today in early signs very positively, is their defence. Something like their line speed, which was very aggressive. And again, it's a great trait of Gatland's over the years. But that's a simple enough thing that they can develop in their, you know, small time together, develop a culture of loving defence. And the Kiwis have done it for years. If, you know, they're coming up against the Crusaders next week. The Crusaders are the most successful Super Rugby side in history, and in the entire game is built around their defence. And can they turn the ball over and in a play an unstructured style against a broken defence once they've turned the ball over? And they've won, I think, six Super Rugby titles on that alone. Lovely to see the Lions really, really embracing that this morning. I thought Seymour on the wing actually led the line in terms of defence really, really well and put his hand up. So, you know, little kind of green shoots of positivity there in that side. I would be very forgiving about the structural stuff at the start, you know.
defence, I take it, is the easiest thing to put in place. Far more difficult to put in a fluent attacking system in a short space of time. That if there are positives to take from this morning, you think that'll be chief amongst them?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, there's not many geniuses out there running defensive, brand new defensive systems. There's a lot of these players will be using similar language. Guys will have worked with Farrell before. You know, they know what a good system is, and they're all, you know, they get it drilled into them every week. You know, there might be small subtle changes. Some defences run a kind of an up and out with a drift, and it's less aggressive off the line. But they will have played in both at this stage. These players, again, we go back to how established they are. You know, they're all established internationals. They've played, come through various club teams. Some of them have been on 4 to 5 different club sides in a 10-year career. Defence will be easy for them to get right. I think it's the way they need to be smart against New Zealand. You're not going to create an incredible attacking strategic game in 2 to 3 weeks.
Yeah, we're speaking to former Harlequins Leinster Connacht fly-half Andrew Dunn on the back of that 13-7 win for the Lions over the New Zealand Provincial Barbarians in Whangarei this morning. The physicality that the Barbarians brought to the game, Dunner, it's obviously going to be replicated, but tenfold. Mm. As the games could come thick and fast against the Super Rugby sides and then the three tests against the All Blacks. Again, do you just put those mitigating factors of being a little tender from the travel, the lack of time together, the lack of real physical training these guys have done over the last 10 days or so? Some of them wouldn't have really had huge sessions for the best part of a fortnight or 3 weeks. That the Barbarians, who were themselves aside, they were only cobbled together in the last week. Like, lest any of our listeners think we're being a little too generous to the Lions here, they were up against a team that was just thrown together in 7 days. It wasn't like these guys had any time together to prepare either, and they were able to keep it with the Lions physically for 80 minutes.
Well, if you take into account a guy who came off the bench, I don't know his name, for the New Zealand Barbarians, he'd come out of retirement
just for this game, you know, 35 years old.
Put that into the equation. That's the mentality of people down in New Zealand coming to play this game. You know, a guy is literally saying, this is my one last chance. Jonah Lomu never played against the Lions. You know, there's superstars down in New Zealand who never got this opportunity. So the mentality of these guys is not going to surprise anyone, but the physicality they're going to bring in a one-off 80-minute game could be the biggest game of their life. So I think that's got to be taken into account. I think something that Gatland introduced, which was very, very new about 15 years ago, was periodization into a season. So when Wasps were really, really physically strong, and I was over in England at that stage and on the tail end of a few unmerciful beatings by Wasps physically, and what would happen is you might play them. We played them in the first game of the season in August and they were pretty poor. We played them again in March and they were on the upward curve. Because he was quite happy to let them lose a few games early on, because he was designing a whole structure around making them peak when it mattered. And I think he's brought that a lot. He's brought that with him in his career into the Welsh system. I think he'll absolutely go there again for the Lions.
Can he do that in such a short space of time?
Yeah,
and he doesn't have a charge of these players from one end of the season to the next.
I think mentally he can deliver a message to that group. You know, it wouldn't surprise me if Gatland slept like a baby tonight. He's happy out because there's no injuries and they won the game. There's not going to be that much of a backlash relative to a draw or a loss.
Suitably dampened.
Absolutely. Expectations are low and he'll probably feed into that himself. But privately he's going to say to that group, well done. Pretty rusty lads, but we're going to peak in 3 weeks. And it's not about these games against the Barbarians where you've got guys coming out of retirement literally to try and fight you, you know. So I think, yeah, I'd say overall pretty happy. Yeah.
So we've talked about guys who maybe didn't do their chances much good. Certainly Jonathan Sexton would love to have that 48 minutes again. He certainly wouldn't have envisaged being taken off with over a quarter of the game remaining. Stuart Hogg didn't have a great game, and you still think that he will be the go-to guy at fullback, but he had a couple of missed tackles. He let a ball through his legs. He misjudged a kick to touch where he ended up giving the ball straight back to the Barbarians, and then there was that butchered 2-on-1 in the corner where he couldn't get a simple enough pass away to Anthony Watson to put him over. But we'll see how that pans out in terms of who's going to fill the fullback shirt. But on the flip side, who performed well for you that maybe bettered the expectations that you had of them? Maybe Kyle Sinclair is one of them, that those soft hands. And the guy who never started a test match for England, and he certainly didn't do his chances of playing a really pivotal role in this tour any harm.
Yeah, I think Sinclair was excellent. And I'd say what will come down to his selection or otherwise will be the old bread and butter, is how good he is in a pressure situation in the scrummage. Because, you know, I'm sure they, while they enjoy the hands, and they were very, very good hands, soft hands, he distributed really, really well. It'll come down to scrummaging in a test series. Paul Wallace, for example, going over in the 97 Lions and doing a job on Oz Durant in an incredible fashion in a three-game series. And Wally didn't have the best hands, let's face it. So maybe other guys who stood out for me, Moriarty, I thought did very well in terms of exceeding expectations. Faletau was excellent, but that's not exceeding expectations. I think he's almost always excellent. Moriarty, I didn't anticipate would put his hand up for a test spot. I think already in that first 56 minutes he played, would maybe, you know, maybe take the coaching staff aback, and they might look at him in a very kind of real sense after that. I thought Seymour did well. I mentioned him previously on the wing. I thought he tackled excellently. I think that's not to be too simplistic, but it's pretty important, and he led the defensive line well. Reece Webb, I thought, did well when he came on. Again, I think he's going to put pressure on Conor Murray in a very real sense. You could arguably say, you know, looking at Reece Webb and Farrell as potential 9 and 10 that nobody saw coming, you know. A lot of people are probably thinking Murray, Sexton to start, but, you know, Gatland is a guy who's not afraid to make a big call, looking at what he did, with, for example, with O'Driscoll down in Australia. So, yeah, I suppose that two or three of the kind of early bolters would probably see more on Moriarty, Reece Webb.
So overall, your message would seem to be there's no need to panic. It was an inauspicious start, but nothing to be overly worried about. They had to get the first game out of the way.
Yeah, there's a lot to lose in those first games, as you've mentioned, and the poison chalice of being selected with, you know, off the back end of a long, long physical season, and then a long trip to New Zealand, and you're rusty and new combinations. I don't think Gatland is going to worry one bit. In fact, you know, he's probably quietly happy about the fact they underperformed. Maybe not so much on an individual level, but on a managing expectations level, I'd say he'd be, you know, quietly satisfied about that.
Okay, good stuff, Andy. Thanks a million for coming in.
Off the ball on News Talk. Thanks to Air. Catch all the sports you love free on the Air Sport Pack with Air Broadband.